Metropolitan Opera opened its 126th season 3 weeks ago in what happens to be Peter Gelb's third year as general manager. It's also the first year he's been able to plan the programs entirely by himself, along with James Levine, of course. We've invited Peter Gelb to come by and tell us what he has in store for us for the rest of the year. And as I understand, in the opera world, maybe the rest of the decade. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you so much. It's actually my fourth season I've begun.
Opera singers tell me that they know what they'll be doing years in advance. Was it impossible for you to program everything before because companies work with such incredibly long lead times?
That's precisely the challenge we who run opera companies face. We don't know how a singer is going to feel tomorrow. So often we face, as I'm sure your listeners read in the newspaper or experience when they go to the opera, we often have singers who have to cancel because of illness or whatever, and we don't know how they're going to feel tomorrow, yet we book them 4 to 5 years in advance. So it's a paradox that we have to live with.
And do you have to work with other opera companies to work those things out?
Well, you know, we are in a very strong position because we are the Met, and without making it sound arrogant, most singers would rather sing on the stage of the Met than most other places because of all the artistic satisfaction they gain from singing on the stage of the Met and the importance of being in New York. And now, of course, with our live transmissions on the radio and into movie theaters around the world, you know, they know that an appearance on the Met stage can have great impact. So because of that, they try their best to make themselves available when crisis strikes, and when we do need to replace a singer, but that doesn't mean they're always available, and certainly it also perhaps creates a certain amount of unhappiness at some of the companies that sometimes have to give up singers to us.
Because you are the Met, and you do have, you say, hey, we want so-and-so to fill in, then somebody else is going to have to lose that person.
Well, it doesn't always work that way. I mean, certainly the singers may want to do it, but if they have contracts with other companies, they're not necessarily going to be released. There's a certain amount of horse trading or opera singer trading that goes on, too.
Were there things that you felt frustrated about during the past 3 years because you couldn't do anything about them?
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is that this has been talked about as being the first season that I planned from scratch together with James Levine, our magnificent music director.
Who's also not well at this moment.
Who's recovering successfully from a procedure he had done on his back. And he will be back conducting soon. In fact, this fall, he's scheduled to conduct our new production of The Tales of Hoffman. But the first three seasons, which were under my aegis as general manager, were scheduled before I arrived, but because there was a strong need to jazz up the schedule, we did make a number of changes and worked around existing commitments and put on a number of new productions that accomplished what we hoped they would, which is to captivate the imagination of a larger public. We hopefully didn't lose our exist. You know, this one of the great challenges of my job is to move this art form, to help move this art form forward, not to lose the loyal lovers of opera who have supported the Met through ticket sales and donations over the decades, and at the same time make the opera feel like a contemporary, exciting theatrical place where new audiences want to come.
I'd imagine it's not just audiences. I saw a documentary recently about the director of an opera and dance complex in which a dancer complained that she was being asked to do something, a completely new version of an old classic, and she hated it. And she wanted him to come to rehearsals and see what a disaster it was.
Well, you know, this is one of the great challenges when you're taking classics and giving them a new look. First of all, the singers themselves, many singers, go from opera house to opera house with the collected interpretations that they have performed over a decade or two, and it's very difficult for a director of a new production to cleanse them of all the ideas that maybe some tired ideas or mishmash of ideas that they picked up at various opera houses around the world and get them to do the new interpretation that director wants to accomplish.
Well, we opened with a selection from The Barber of Seville, which is in repertory, and it'll be directed by Bartlett Sher, who's known primarily for his work in the theater. Was he a daring choice?
Well, I think he was I think the audiences would agree that he was a good choice because he's such a great talent. He directed the Barber. This is a revival of the Barber.
Mm-hmm. It's his production already.
It's his production that was introduced a couple of seasons ago, and it's a wonderful production because it really does everything that we hope an opera production can do today, which is to sustain the great musical values, and at the same time, it's funny, which is what the Barber of Seville is supposed to be. It has wonderful comic delivery and timing. It has a set that actually, for the first time in the history of the Met, it has a set that goes beyond the limits of the proscenium of the stage. It has a passerelle that reaches out across, because the orchestra is not a large orchestra in Rossini's operas. The orchestra is small enough that we can build this passerelle that extends on either side of the orchestra pit and then connects beyond the orchestra pit. So with the singers at times are actually almost in the lap of the audience, which is a very exciting experience for the audience members. And I remember several members of our board and other loyal ticket buyers saying to me that they never realized The Barber of Seville was so funny until they saw this production.
And is that because opera companies are more and more aware of the acting part of operas? I remember when I was a kid, you'd go to the Met and there'd be Victoria de Los Angeles and Jan Pierce in La Boheme, and she was dying of consumption even though she weighed 300 pounds. And they stood there, and they sang beautifully, but there wasn't much of an attempt to be consumptive.
Well, as we know, though, of course, being overweight is not good for your health. So perhaps there was something to it.
It may have helped her. There used to be a thinking that if you were larger, it would help you as a singer.
Well, I think some singers still might think that, but obviously there's ample evidence that you don't have to be large to be a great singer. I mean, some of the greatest stars, not just of today, but of all time, you know, managed to look the parts they were playing as well as singing great. And we don't have a casting policy at the Met. I know it's been suggested that perhaps since I've been there, there's been a new emphasis on singers who look great, and that singers who don't look as good are being shed. That's not true at all. The fact of the matter is, first and foremost, what is important to the Met is having the greatest voices on that stage. And, you know, without amplification, because, of course, opera singers don't use amplification in a 4,000-seat house, which is what the Met is, that's its capacity, there is no place to hide if you don't have a great voice. So great voices come first. But in addition to having a great voice, to be a real star, you have to be a great presence. And, you know, even some of the singers who grew large as their careers evolved, like Luciano Pavarotti, for example.
Or Deborah Voigt, who there was a big flap about.
Well, Deborah Voigt happens to be a great actress.
Yeah. And a great singer.
And a great singer. And, you know, there are singers who are larger than other singers who we very happily put on our stage because they are compelling performers. So, you know, sure, if you're playing a debutante, then you need to sort of more or less look the part. But there are many roles that are sung by singers of larger girth who are equally convincing. And but, you know, the most important thing is that they are able to deliver a complete theatrical musical message to the audience.
Are there certain productions that the audiences insist on you continue to keep in the repertory. The restaurants sometimes will complain that they have this dish and they try to take it off the menu every so often, and then everybody complains and they have to keep it on.
Well, you know, there is certainly change is always difficult to accomplish. But I do know that there is no alternative to ultimately creating new productions of just about every piece, because at some point they become too tired and you know, they just don't make sense to an audience. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that the Met's audience was starting to age and starting to decline a few years ago. And now it's increasing and getting younger. So I believe the reason for that is because the artistic initiatives that we have undertaken at the Met, which include revitalizing the repertory with new productions of standard classics, as well as expanding it with new works, is what is behind creating the interest amongst the audiences. Nobody wants to see the same production over and over and over again, even if they really think they do. I think if they really thought about it, that they would say that. I mean, you know, there has to be some expiration date on a production.
But later we'll talk about what happened when you did a new production of Tosca. But I read that you once said your job is either the most coveted job in the performing arts or the most likely to lead to a nervous breakdown. So now you're entering your fourth year. Which one do you think is going to be your decision ultimately?
I think having a nervous breakdown is not a voluntary decision. My job becomes more exciting every day. When I was a child, my father's principal advice to me for my future was that whatever you do, don't be bored. And I can honestly say that there is never a boring moment in my day, which starts very early in the morning and ends very late at night, typically, and involves most days of the week, including the weekend. I think that I will not have a nervous breakdown unless I'm unable to succeed in my work, and then that might lead to one. But so far, I believe that in spite of the huge challenges we face with the economy, with an aging art form that needs to be refreshed, we seem to be holding our own.
Well, we'll take a little break and we'll come back and talk about how you do that, and we'll talk about what happens when a production gets panned, although I gather some people love it. So will you continue it? Will you not? My guest is Peter Gelb, who is running the Metropolitan Opera these days. Actually, he is entering his fourth year as general manager. Stay with us for more. Back with Peter Gelb, general manager of the Metropolitan Opera, which is now in its 126th season. He is in the beginning of his fourth season at the Met. And do you know every piece of music? I mean, would you recognize immediately what this was?
I do not know every single piece of every detail of every piece of music. No,
every opera that is performed at the Met.
But I sit through every rehearsal that takes place on the stage of the Met, and I try to stand as on top of things as I can.
Now, the Met has introduced HD broadcasts to go along with the regular broadcasts that have been on. Have they always been on WQXR?
The Saturday, the Met's radio broadcast history goes back almost 80 years, mm-hmm. and I don't
so
know.
So half of its history almost. Well, no, that's 126, yeah, but okay. But two-thirds of its history.
It was the pioneer amongst performing arts companies to use the media, and it's In fact, the radio broadcast began as an extension of the college Saturday football season. That's why the radio broadcast season of the Met historically began in December when the college football games ended. In those days, I guess there weren't bowl games going into the end of December and January. And so it just shows you how popular opera once was, that the same radio stations around the country that carried football would then turn to opera. The radio broadcasts of the Met have stayed popular, and certainly there are obviously several generations of opera lovers who grew up listening to the Met and were introduced to the Met across the country, and eventually across North America and Europe, where they are heard regularly. But the HD transmissions began when I became general manager. This is the fourth season of them. And we just transmitted our new production of Tosca last Saturday into approximately 200,000, an audience of 200,000 people saw it in 36 countries around the world, live from the Met. And that is, you know, a modern extension of the radio broadcast, which continue. But the idea of being able to actually not only hear their favorite opera performances, but to see them and to see them reported as if they were the operatic equivalent of, say, Monday Night Football is a very exciting experience for opera lovers, both new and old.
Meanwhile, people will continue to hear the broadcasts on Saturdays at 1 p.m. on WQXR,
right
now at 105.9. When you were talking about the old days, I was thinking about how I used to hear Helen Traubel and other singers like that on the Edgar Berg and Charlie McCarthy show. They were all on the Ed Sullivan show. As big as Anna Netrebko is today, or Renee Fleming, I can't imagine that happening.
Well, this is, shows you, you know, how far opera has had drifted from the cultural mainstream. I'm trying my best to get it slightly closer back to the center by making opera more widely available, and certainly by supporting these brilliant young stars like Anna Netrebko or Natalie Dessay and others. With our transmissions into movie theaters, but the days when Beverly Sills would guest host the Tonight Show are no more. That's true.
Now I'm going to address the elephant in this room. You opened the season with a new production of Tosca, directed by Luc Bondy. You obviously couldn't have been happy with the reaction. The New Yorker called it a fiasco. The Guardian referred to it as a cacophony of boos, and New York Magazine said that Bondy's Euro minimalism has become something of a house style, dim light, blank walls, black costumes, and door abstraction.
Well, in my position, it certainly wouldn't be wise to argue with a critic, and I make it a habit not to. However, the good news is that the public, in great numbers, has embraced this production and recognized what it is in it that is particularly appealing, which is to begin with, one has to understand that Tosca is not a pleasant story. Even, you know, the audiences at the Met had grown used to seeing it sort of in this Disney-esque picture postcard production of Franco Zeffirelli's, that is ornate and detailed and in its scenic nuance, but when you consider that Tosca is about one of the most horrible villains in all of operatic writing, Scarpia, who is a rapist, a torturer, who has forsaken God, which I guess you do when you become a rapist and a torturer, but is also determined to murder. He's also a murderer. The action revolves around him and his tricking of Tosca into betraying her lover, and what Luc Bondy did was simply strip the story down to the essence of this rather tawdry, frightening tale, and presented a production of Tosca with really gets to the heart of that story.
So you think people will get used to it, or is that kind of reaction going to push you into making some adjustments?
Well, you know, it's been suggested that we might be making adjustments by some of the critics, but one of the great challenges that I've had in taking over the Met, which was considered to be really in recent decades a bastion of conservatism, was to convince the world's leading theater directors that the Met would be a hospitable environment for them to work their craft. And because of a concerted effort that began when I was appointed, many of the top directors in the world are now coming here. And whether it's Patrice Chéreau, who's doing this amazing production of House of the Dead of Janáček, which is opening in November, or Bart Scheer's new production of The Tales of Hoffman, which is opening in December, or Richard Eyre's new production of Carmen, which is opening on New Year's Eve. Luc Bondy, like these directors, is considered to be one of the great master theater directors in the world. And in order to entice these directors to work at the Met, I had to persuade them that I was going to be supportive of their efforts. And I chose directors whose work has been lauded and acclaimed. These are not, Luc Bondy is not, as some people have suggested, some avant-garde experimentalist. He is a very serious theater director who in Europe is considered to be quite conservative in terms of his scenic representations, but famous and loved for the characterizations he draws from the operas that he directs.
We're going to go out with something from The Nose, Shostakovich's adaptation of the Gogol story. When is that going to be performed?
That opens in the beginning of March, and that's an extraordinary production that is probably going to be the largest interior art installation in New York, because it's the work of William Kendridge, the noted South African artist, as well as a great theatrical coup in addition.
And who's directing that?
Kendridge, who's designing it and directing it. And
wow.
At the same time, the Museum of Modern Art is putting on a huge retrospective of his work the same week we open at the Met.
Peter, you've come a long way from Sony Classics, where the soundtrack for Titanic was your biggest hit, if I remember correctly. Also, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Well, Titanic was a huge commercial hit. It sold about 29 million copies. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was both commercial and artistically, I think, a very interesting project, because it involved the work of Tan Dun and Yo-Yo Ma.
And we thank you so much for coming by here.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be listening every Saturday at 1 p.m. at QXR for the Met broadcast. Peter Gelb is general manager of the Metropolitan Opera. Here's a little bit from Shostakovich's The Nose. Нигде же в соборе согласен.